You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What are you even worried about? It's Worry Week on The Wire.
For Worry Week, we are discussing sexual harassment. When I was looking more into this topic, I came across an article by Vox which discussed an allegation made by a woman against President Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Vox discussed how the New York Times, who were the first to break the story, labeled this as sexual misconduct and not sexual assault. This got me thinking of how our media and our society discusses these issues and uses the terms interchangeably and what the consequences of doing this could be. To find out more about this, I spoke to Marmarie Stevens, senior lecturer at the School of Law at Victoria University. As a content warning, this discussion involves Marmarie and I talking about what the terms sexual harassment, sexual assault, and sexual misconduct mean and discussing a sexual abuse case that involves a child. Can you just give me a brief rundown of what the terms sexual harassment, sexual assault, and sexual misconduct mean?
Okay, so sexual assault, to start off, is a very broad term, and so sexual assault contains within it the whole gamut of physical sexual behaviour perpetrated on the body of another. So that could range from indecent assault, which is just basically unwanted sexual touching, through to sexual connection. So when we're talking about the legal ways in which these are defined, sexual connection can involve, you know, the introduction to the genitalia of another, or the anus of another, body part of another person or an object, right? So that's sexual connection. So obviously that's way down the other end of the scale from something like indecent assault, which can involve placing your hand in a sexual manner on the body of another person, but not affecting any kind of connection, as I described before. And then at that same far end of the spectrum is where you have also sexual violation and rape. So sexual assault is a really, really wide term. So it can cover something relatively still unwanted, but certainly not of the nature of unlawful sexual connection or sexual violation or rape down the other end of the spectrum. So it's really important, I think, to understand that as far as the law is concerned, sexual assault is a very, very broad umbrella term and covers a whole wide range of behaviours. Sexual harassment is different because we're not talking about a physical behaviour. So sexual harassment, that appears in our legislation by way, for example, of the Employment Relations Act, which refers to, effectively, if you wanted to kind of boil it down, unwanted sexual attention, right? So if you're in a workplace environment and somebody comments to you about your body, about the way that you present, or they proposition you, or they put pressure on you to engage in sexual behaviour, but this does not involve touching, you know, the impact upon a body of another, then that's where you're looking at sexual harassment. There can be, in the definition under the, I think it's the Employment Relations Act, there can be kind of sexual behaviour, but it's not very clear to me if that can also expand to include sexual assault. I wouldn't think so. I think the two kinds of scenarios are quite different. So in one, you're looking very much at behaviour designed to induce a response in another person, and in the other, you're looking at actually assault on the person. So those are the kinds of behaviour. Sexual misconduct, actually what I prefer to think about really is something like sexual discrimination, because that's another kind of legal term where we're looking at the right that are being upheld, say for example Section 19 of the Bill of Rights Act. You know, everybody has the right to live a life that's free of discrimination, right? And one of the grounds for discrimination is sex, as well as sexual orientation. So sexual discrimination also has its own particular characteristics, and that also appears in the Human Rights Act and the Employment Relations Act as well. As far as sexual misconduct is concerned, I think you can kind of see that as covering a very broad base of behaviours, but there's no particular crime, for example, that's defined as sexual misconduct. So I think that's probably a far broader term than something like sexual assault. Sexual misconduct can include harassment, but it may also include some kind of physical behaviour as well. So it could include harassment, assault kind of behaviours. I'd imagine the misconduct is taking into account a whole bunch of behaviours about sexual behaviour in the workplace. So that would include, you know, assault, harassment, so that physical and non-physical kinds of behaviours.
So why is it important to use the correct term when describing or reporting an incident?
Well, I guess it's because different consequences come into play. So, for example, if you're talking about sexual assault, that's a criminal matter, right? Because you're dealing with that gamut between something like indecent assault, which is a crime, and sexual violation, including sexual violation by rape or unlawful sexual connection. Those are very serious crimes. They're kind of trespasses on the body, if you like. So those have criminal consequences. And very obvious criminal consequences, and large amounts of jail time are at stake. Whereas if you're talking about something like sexual harassment, you have civil kind of remedies there. It's a civil problem in a way, and so you're talking about things like complaints to the Human Rights Commission, other kinds of remedies that are just different to criminal penalty. So that, I guess it's important to be very clear about when you're referring to something that comes under that sexual assault umbrella, because you're talking about the potential of somebody's, you know, physical integrity being violated for one thing, but also in terms of perpetrators, their liberty being at stake. So it's really important to just keep those things in mind if you're dealing with different kinds of behaviour, one that may not be physical and may not incur criminal penalty, the other that may. I mean, sexual discrimination is also, you know, there are specific remedies for sexual discrimination as well. But again, that's not part of the criminal context.
And so with the awareness and momentum hashtag MeToo campaign has been gaining, and we've had like a lot of survivors coming out with their own stories and experiences, we also know that there's really no specific category of what their abuse should be. You know, it's, as you've been saying, it's very broad, and I guess it's all about their experience. I just want to know, what are the implications of, I guess, categorising survivors of sexual abuse into, like, a specific grouping then?
To my way of understanding it, the stuff that's come out in the wake of the Me Too movement in the States, and that has kind of caught a ripple of, well, caught fire, if you like, in the New Zealand context, these are matters that kind of most often will fall into the kind of sexual assault umbrella, under that umbrella, and also will include matters of harassment. So the two things are all coming out in the wake of these revelations, and this is an incredibly important thing for us to be going through. We don't have to be silent any longer, put up with behaviour that we just think's a bit off. Actually, these things need to be brought out to the public. But I think what you're asking is, are you in danger of kind of labelling experiences of a huge variety of men and women, because it, you know, sexual harassment and sexual assault is not confined to one gender or any gender. Do you risk kind of typecasting or stereotyping those behaviours? And I mean, I guess the short answer is that any public discourse does that. There's always the potential to erase personal experience by saying, oh, well, that's just like such and such. So you all belong together in the same category, and there should be one easy solution to deal with all of those situations. So yeah, there is always a danger that our real life kind of lived experiences get eroded, if you like, by being lumped together in the same waka. But that's why it's really important that people come forward and talk about what's gone on for them, because, you know, you may have had an experience in your life that you don't know whether that counts as harassment or it counts as assault or it counts as discrimination. And sometimes the only way we can kind of identify what we've gone through is by hearing what other people have gone through. So there is always a risk that things get stereotyped in public discourse. But the very valuable part is that we hear real people's voices who can then recognise themselves. Others can recognise themselves in what those other real people say. And I think that's incredibly important. So it's worth running the risk.
Going forth from here, how do we as a society start taking responsibility for using the correct terms?
I was really struck. There's a recent case that came out in the news yesterday about a guy who, an old man actually, who's just been put in jail for 12 years, he's in his 80s now, for abusing, I think, up to 50 or perhaps more than 50 young girls. And what really struck me about that story and kind of broke my heart was that there was an 8-year-old whom he'd abused many years ago, and she went to her parents and she told them and they didn't believe her. And I've got an 8-year-old. And it breaks my heart to think that she would come and tell me and I would just dismiss that she could do that, and I would just dismiss her account. So I think it's really important that we, in the first instance, we don't judge. We don't know, we haven't walked a mile in the shoe of the person, in the shoes of the person who's talking to us or that we're hearing from. So we don't judge. That doesn't mean to say that there aren't some people out there who might spread misinformation. That human beings being human beings, there's always that risk. But the greater risk is that people who do come out and say that this has happened to them don't get, in the first instance, believed. I mean, the process of law is one of testing. So those things can be tested in some forum at some other point in time. But if your friend or a person that you know says this to you, I guess my first response would be, you have to believe them. And then whatever happens further on down the track, you know, mā te wā, that can let that time deal with whatever happened. But in the first instance, if we're going to make speaking out something that's possible to do, we have to start actually listening to each other. And then, you know, we can discern at some point or another later on down the track when we have more information what is truth. But I think actually just accepting other people's accounts of their own lives for what they are at that point in time is important.
Do you have anything further you would like to add or any other comments you would want to make on this?
I think it's an important time that we're in, and you know, for those for young girls and women and young boys and men that are coming, that are growing up and kind of moving into this world, and those are the decision makers of the future, what we do now matters. You know, we need to be making good choices about how we give aroha to one another, I guess. Those of us who have suffered, that we extend aroha to all of those who have, and be just open.
If any of this content was harmful or disturbing in any way, please let us know. And if you and someone you know has been affected by this, please know you can call Rape Crisis on 0800 88 33 00, Victim Support on 0800 842 846, and Women's Refuge on 0800 733 843.
Worry Week on The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.